honest, yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a bank holiday Monday. It's raining outside, but we're still here. Let's just kind of brag about the fact that we came into work after four league finals. Keen and Conan, as usual, are here.
It's double time on a bank holiday, though. So
I need to ask what it is for coming in on a bank holiday. I haven't actually thought about that. Is it double day? Do you get two
Are you
days?
Not the producer, really? You're looking after me and Keen here.
You get 2 days. You get a day's holiday. We get a free pass next week on the GAA.
You don't have to come in someday. I'm kind of give out about something. Jim Gavin took over Dublin in 2013. They hadn't won a league since 1993. Now they have won 5 out of 6 and they were beaten in Europe and been in 6 league finals in a row. It's an unbelievable achievement, really, when that shouldn't probably be sniffed at, considering how competitive that Division 1 is.
Yeah, well, league form is always the barometer, because you're playing everybody in what you consider to be a level playing field. It's home and away, although in a number of those campaigns, Dublin did have, we'll call it, home advantage, where they got to play all their games in Croke Park. But the level of performance, consistency of performance over those number of years has been fantastic, and I'd love to see what the average winning margin was for them over those 6 years. I mean, they've given out an awful lot of hammerings to teams, and they deserve huge credit for that level of consistency. And the management have been the mainstay in that. The players have changed and new players have stepped up to the mark, but the management have done a fantastic job.
Yeah, no, they definitely have. We'll talk a bit about Dublin and Galway in part two and Cavan Roscommon, and we won't do performance of the week. We'll have a look at the other two finals then in part three. But because I watched all four matches, and isn't it funny, this is such an obvious thing to say, but as you watch through each final, you see the level is going up. If you were told that you weren't told what levels each one of these matches were, you easily would. Maybe 2 and 3 you might not know, it wasn't as obvious a difference between, but you could see a serious step up from the Division 4 final to Division 3 final. Not too much then from Division 3 to 2, but then from 2 to 1 another massive step in quality, and you know, just maybe even intensity around the whole game.
I agree.
Is that a great point?
Yeah,
that each level goes up.
Well, that is, I don't know, you've hit on something miraculous here that nobody has ever spotted before. Fair play to you.
Right, that went down like a lead balloon. Anyways, let's talk about Damien Comer, someone that we can all marvel at. Like, I mean,
can we do a special podcast just about Comer today?
Yeah.
Because he's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
He is the footballer. If you're a kid and you don't want to be Damien Comer, yeah, what are you even playing football for?
Yeah.
Like, he's just unbelievable. I'd say he's a marketing dream as well. He just has it all. He plays the game with such honesty and ferocity, and he can just do spectacular things. Anytime the ball goes in his area,
yeah,
you just immediately start paying attention. Like, you could nearly be drifting asleep on the couch watching a game, and it comes into Comer's zone. You're like, right, something's going to happen here.
I was watching that in the first half thinking, I'd say Hill 16 aren't even giving this lad abuse. I'd say they love him, because they'd love a big burly kind of fella that's like explosive. There's no Gaelic football fan wouldn't love this man, and it just was criminal. After 17 minutes I tweeted, this is the Damien Comer show. He didn't get another kick pass then until late in the second half. Like, it's just, and this is our argument with Galway, and again we'll get into more tactical stuff in there, but Comer's just he's an absolute joy to watch, and it's the fact that they have him and have Shane Walsh and have Michael Daly coming back is where a lot of the criticism of Galway's system, which wasn't as defensive as I thought it was going to be yesterday, they were fine, perfectly fine to me. Little tweak or two to get this Comer on the bloody ball. Like, he can take two men on, give it to him,
and
just get the ball in his hand when he's being tightly marked. Doesn't matter if he's being tightly marked,
any ball is really a win. That ball, like, anything in his direction is worthwhile, because he's going to make something out of it.
Yeah, well, like, if you look at basketball, maybe is possibly the most sophisticated sort of team sport in terms of all the different plays they have and stuff like that. But the bottom line in basketball, you just get the ball to your best player and let them make something happen. Like, that's really what Galway need to do, is just wherever they can, just give the ball to Comer. Just give it to him. Even if there's two lads standing beside him, run up and hand him the ball and then get out of his way.
Yeah. Yeah. Let him take on two men, because he got the difference between him and a Michael Murphy, for example. Michael Murphy's got all the attributes that Comer has, except for that explosive speed. Like, that sidestep and that ability to be able to get away from him quickly, then with a bit of explosion lean into him, that's he, Philly McManderson has gone flying. He's out of the picture now. You've just blown him away. But it's that explosion to be able to get that yard away, then get the contact in, and then get, you know what I mean, free yourself
like
again.
He's just phenomenal the way he protects the ball as well in the tackle. He always has it in the outside arm, so if he's taking a man on his right hand side, he has the ball under his left arm, protects it well, which means the player has to lean across him, which means he's putting his arm across the body. Comer drives through that arm, all of a sudden that arm is up around his neck, and it's a stonewall free, like every single time. He can kick off left foot, right foot, he can go both sides. If you want to go in very physical, he'll shrug you off. If you stand off him, he probably has that explosive pace to just drive past you and drive through the tackle. So he has it every single
way.
It's
hard to stop.
Very hard to stop. Yeah. And look, he's an absolute dream kind of guy to have in your team. And when you're on a team with him, you know, you just want to get the ball into his hands. Like, you know, the whole message from the team is isolate him. Try and isolate him one-on-one. If you can't, isolate him two-on-one and actually leave him that space to play in. Oftentimes, teams have a really good forward and they get the ball in and then they flood it with support runners. Sometimes you don't want that support. You want to say, lads, stay out of my way. You get out there and keep your men out there as well. Don't crowd it up. I'm happy enough two-on-one. I'll beat two men and I'll take the score. And Comer can do that all day long, I say.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. He was just outstanding, and it's nice to see him get national prominence, because we interviewed him early on the show last year and we've been kind of singing his praises. Not like the secret wasn't out about him, like, I mean, but to see him doing it on a huge stage like that, it's just it was great to watch. A lot of people giving out about the referee. I saw Matty Ford saying he played with Dublin. Thought he did towards the end, the last 10 minutes a little bit, gave them one or two very obvious kind of frees, but I don't think over the course of the game he necessarily played with them. Like, I mean, you could argue now Scully, geez, his second yellow was very harsh, lads. Like, I mean, there's too many lads we talked about before accentuating these contacts in the chest and they're flying back. Damien Comer did it as well, like Paul Conroy did it. Like, if a lad's running past you now, you can kind of slap the ball hard in his chest, but they're almost taking that contact and throwing up their feet and making it look like you've clotheslined them. And Scully did nothing there outside of trying to dislodge that ball. That's all his offence was. It wasn't a second yellow for me.
But that's like, but there was just bad decisions. I don't think it was biased. Like, somebody made a really good tackle on Dean Rock. Same sort of thing. The ball came popping out. Someone
on Mannion. That was a terrible free. That was a perfect.
So he was just giving these frees. One on Mannion, I thought, was a bit disputable. Some people said it was up high around the neck. But again, he was just giving those frees. That was his thing, where he didn't like seeing that stray arm pulling someone back.
Maybe.
High up as well. But. Yeah, like, I don't think it was biased. There were a couple of decisions towards the end when you're a neutral and you're sort of getting bored of Dublin winning all the time. You want the Galway to get
the Conroy foul, I thought, could have been given one at a really important juncture, and he wasn't.
Yeah, possibly, but I think the big difference in the latter stages of the game, when the game was there in the melting pot really to be won, I think that the difference between Galway and Dublin was Galway kept taking the ball into the tackle and losing it, and Dublin rarely took it into the tackle. If they were taking it into the tackle, it was to a loose arm, which a good forward will be able to make the most of. You know, sort of a, won't call it a lazy tackle, but a tired tackle at that stage of the game, where it's not body contact. It's a kind of a loose arm that you can drive through, and maybe, you know, when your momentum takes you through that kind of a loose arm, it tends to end up quite high up around your neck or up around your shoulder, which you can, which referees will always look at as being a foul or a tug of the jersey. Whereas, you know, the Dubs were. They just were a little bit cleverer, more patient, a better decision making near the end of the game. Galway had an attack where I can't remember what player it was. He was under a bit of pressure and he skied one up in the air, you know, when he had support runners outside. And it's just those sort of decision making near the end of the game. And the Dubs have done this consistently.
They have. I think the crowd helped them over the line at that stage of the game. I remember I tweeted yesterday and I said, if you want a better chance of beating Dublin, go and support your team. Like, if you look at Mayo, Mayo's crowd will Mayo into those games when it's looking like it's going against them. And don't think for a second, I've played Dublin and Croke Park, that crowd, that cheer of a crowd is demoralising for you. It's like, oh Jesus, you know, like, I mean, what home advantage and that crowd. Like, I mean, teams are punished for play to have their home games in empty stadiums. Why do you think that is? Like, I mean, it's a huge advantage. Go and support them. Pack out a crowd, an area in the Cusack stand, even if you're outnumbered 3-1. Get all together in an area and cheer and get help your team. Mayo don't give Dublin the hill for All Ireland finals. Mayo refuse to swap. They refuse to give Dublin the Hill 16. They have nearly half the supporters on Hill 16. And that's all psychological. That's playing their own game. And if it's an Ireland semi-final, Mayo nearly have Dublin in Croke Park. don't think that has anything to do. Like, Mayo are obviously a great team, but if you're telling me in Galway in that last 4 or 5 minutes that a crowd really getting behind him couldn't have willed, you know what I mean, willed them on a bit. There were other mistakes as well, and we'll talk about in the game, but supporters need to help their team going there. Like, I mean, because you can't just go up there like Kerry and just not go up with numbers. And like, you saw Kerry against Mayo last year, their support was a disgrace compared to Mayo. It always was like Mayo had a home advantage in those games against Kerry, and they beat them well.
And the thing is, like, that Dublin crowd can turn on the team as well. You go back 10-15 years
ago, they always did.
It was debilitating for players, like, you're playing under that pressure. So like, if you have your own crowd there getting them behind, I think you see Dublin are in a nice position where the players actually help the crowd come to life. It's not really the crowd, it helped the players. You know, they respond to what they're seeing on the pitch rather than the other way around.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Yeah, well, I think if you go back a number of years, the whole thing, like we would have spoken about it before playing Dublin, was to try, and you always knew Dublin were going to start the game really, really fast, or they were going to get a patch in the game where they were going to get, you know, a bit of momentum. You know, if they got a goal, like the key thing, if Dublin got a goal, the whole crowd would just go bananas. Yeah. Dublin really try and drive on, and they try and kick on and get another 2 or 3 points on top of that. So, you know, and that's when you're at sixes and sevens in your own team, and you're there, maybe a little bit of panic sets in. So
and you can't even get a message to each other because the stadium is alive. All these things.
The place is absolutely hopping. So the thing with all of that is you always try to quell the crowd. So you always try and, you know, expect what's going to happen. So there is going to be this roar if we do concede something. They are going to get a spell. Don't panic. You know, keep sticking to the basics of the game and keep doing your job. And then when you do get the opportunity to get your own score, like, there was no sweeter sound, particularly for me as a free taker, where you'd be taking a free against the Dubs and there'd be this, you know, there'd be all the whistling going on. As soon as the ball would leave your boot, all you could hear was you'd hear a pin drop, and then you'd hear your own crowd, you know,
a little muffled cheer.
And then, in fairness, Mead, we used to always, obviously against Dublin, we'd get a good crowd in, and then you'd hear that, and that was a boost to you as the away team, we'll call it there, that you're always trying to get your own crowd into the game, give them something to get behind as well, because it is something that can make a difference. Like, it can be a very, very small thing in a game. It can be a turnover. You see, you know, hurling, I always be critical of the hurlers. They win a free in their half back line, they celebrate it like they've won the All Ireland. But these are small things in a game, particularly when you play against the away crowd, that they're the type of things that teams probably need to do to just accentuate the positivity of that and get their own crowd into the game, particularly when you're the underdog, as you will be against Dublin. Any little thing, any score you get, you know, kind of a loud roar between teammates on the field, just to try and get that energy into your team, because you don't have it from the crowd, the Dubs do.
Yeah, the lift that it gives you, and like what we've explained, the demoralising effect the crowd cheering can have on the opposition. Like, I mean, like when Dublin score a goal, it's sixes and sevens on your team. It's so hard to recover. It's really difficult to recover from it. But, oh yeah, I wanted to mention that Johnny Heaney yellow card was a terrible decision as well. It was a short kick out that he actually had kicked away, and his momentum carried him into, I'm not sure who it was, it could have been Kieran Kilkenny or somebody.
I think it was Scully.
Yeah. And he got a yellow card for it. I didn't think it was even a free. So we don't know about the referee. We're not coming down on the Matty Ford playing with Dublin side. We're like, and then again, there's another one too. Like, if that Conroy foul, it's always late on fouls that people remember, and to say you know what I mean? They remember the big moments at important parts of the game, and have completely forgot a first half that could have been perfectly. Yeah. That's just a natural kind of thing. Johnny Cooper, lads. I've never seen anything like this man. We're big fans of Johnny Cooper, at least I am anyways. He's a torment, we've said this before. He pleaded innocence with every foul yesterday. I've never, like, he does this on a regular basis. It's almost like he's analysing what happened to the rep. Now, Comer did grab his jersey and pull him down at one stage.
I thought he fouled Comer before that.
He had his hand. Now, but Comer's doing that kind of thing. But Cooper has an excuse for every foul. And, like, you're looking at him thinking, have I missed something there? Was that a clear foul? But it's like, geez, it's just being an absolute winner, is it? Like, they just cannot accept any kind of...
Yeah, well, the one guy who's very obvious about this is Suarez. Every single offside decision that's given against Suarez, he's given the thumbs up to the linesman. He's given out. Like, do you know, he's 5 yards
it's
offside
true,
and he's at it. So, look, I just think that's a competitive spirit in people. And, like, we all do the same thing when we're playing in a match. The ball goes over the sideline. Even if you kicked it over the line yourself, you still claim that it's your ball. You go and you grab the ball and you go to take it quickly for your team in the hope that everyone will just go, Sure, it must be his ball. Look at him going to get it. You know. Yeah. So these are every look. Most people do this. Most players do. But Cooper, because we see him so often, and he does when he does plead, he's so convincing. And he, you know, for such an assassin on the field, he puts on such a little innocent face on him when he's talking to the referee.
Oh yeah, and he'll have the exact thing that happened. And it's just, I always wonder with Cooper, because I've marked Cooper in a championship game. Like, it's a club championship in Dublin. It should be an intense game. He was wing back, I was wing forward for Nafina and Parnells. And you wouldn't hear boo out of him. Like, so this is something he's brought into his game. Because you always think these fellas that are maniac winners, that act like that, that's just in them since childhood. These are the lads that walk off the green in the estate when they lose, crying.
They take
because
their football,
yeah, they bring the football and bring it home. But he wasn't like that in that championship game, and you'd imagine that's either in you or it's not. But he's just changed his.
maybe he's just saving it for better players.
Not even better players, because I'm sure he fouled me in that game. I don't remember any remonstrations or any kind of.
I think sometimes younger players, some young players, kind of have that in their makeup anyway, and other guys they develop it as they, I suppose, go up the levels and they get to a certain standard and they realise, okay, I'm at this level now. I can either be an also-ran and not really make the step up, or I can change my mindset and become, you know, just harden my mentality, or just change a slight little tweak in how you approach everything. It's just it's a mentality, it's a change in a mindset of how you approach your training, everything to do with the game. But ultimately, it's not about, it's how you perform in the games. Like, Cooper, whether he does that, whether he behaves like that in training or not, I don't know. We'll never know that.
Definitely won't find that out.
But when it comes to the crunch, when it comes to those, the big moments, the big games, he's just an absolute warrior. Yeah. And Dublin have loads of those guys. Mm, and, you know, they deserve, again, they just deserve huge credit. Like, Cooper has changed into, like, just an absolute pest, as we call him. Absolutely top class defender.
Yeah, and it's kind of, he's almost at the stage now, he's like the Ryan McManaman. Like, I mean, you almost gone to the stage where the annoyance of the way he carries on is gone, and you almost appreciate him now. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm starting to really appreciate how kind of annoying he is, and how good he is. And what should be pointed out, that when I marked him as well, he hadn't played for Dublin at that senior level, so that's a good point. Maybe he did need to bring, realise I need to bring this hardened edge and everything that comes with that hardened edge, you know what I mean, to make that step up. And he's definitely made that step up from the time I marked him, because I didn't think there was much to him that day, to be honest. Not that I roasted him or anything, but I just don't remember ever being massively impressed.
I know the point you're making. Like, sometimes you play against a guy and you think, this lad is a superstar, this lad is top class, he's serious potential. And sometimes you play against a guy in a given day and you wouldn't necessarily be overly impressed by them, and then you see them step on as years go by they really improve. And in fairness, that can happen.
Yeah, Broderick, lads, I in the Carlow Leash game, I was watching this on Saturday, and it's Paul Broderick, and he had a free. Now, he had a bit of a meltdown from frees, because he's a very accurate player, and he didn't have his shooting boots on. Like, he was pulling a lot of them, and got a free in the second half, and it was 14 yards out, and I tweeted that he went for the top corner. Tomás O'Shea replied back to me and says, are you joking? Or he didn't think he did. And these kind of things usually get split 50-50, but he has a wand of a left foot, we know that. The free was on the 20, I think it was on the 21. Leash had one defender back in the goals, along with Brody. And there was a gap there in that top left-hand corner. You know, the real picturesque top corners with left foot. And he hit it with such pace and power and missed it just around the level of the crossbar. I think it's absolute certainty that he went for a. And think of the boost Carlo would have got from that, and think of the cheekiness of it. And I just thought it's exactly what he was trying to do.
Yeah, well, I'll make the case for and I'll make the case against. Okay. Right. So I'll start with the case against. The case against is that he had pulled a lot of his frees from the ground prior to that. He'd pulled them to the right. So he hit this one and he overcompensated to the left, and
Which would go in keeping with the kind of meltdown he's had.
Which would just be, again, another bad miss. But the case for is that I think he is a quality player, and I think he has done. He goes for things. Like, I mean, the case for him is that he kept going for shots. Like, he missed a few chances, he kept going for them. He got a really good score in the second half as well. So I personally think he was going for it. I think if you look at the way he strikes the ball, you know, it's not a natural strike if you're trying to chip the ball over the bar. You wouldn't
go much power.
Yeah, you wouldn't go with that much power if you're only clipping the ball from the 21-yard line over the bar. And if you do look at the way the Laois defence was set up, you're correct, there wasn't pretty much half the goals was open for him. They were probably a little bit, they were all expecting him to go for the score, and sometimes that's when you get that opportunity. And I'll say that I think he was going for it.
Okay, yeah. Are we going for 3 out of 3 here, Conan?
I think so. If I didn't see all his earlier frees, I definitely would think he went for it. Yeah. Almost 90%.
That's what's giving the doubt.
Yeah.
That's what's making...
Like, he obviously had a bad day free kick-wise, but if you look about half a second after he kicks it, he does that sort of thing where he's looking around the ball, you know, where he goes around the left to see if it is whipping in, almost is it good enough sort of thing.
Right.
You know, when he does...
Ah, well, there, that's the defence rests then, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there we go. So he did mean it, there's no doubt about that. Brendan Murphy tweet, lads, we'll continue on Carlo here, because I was shocked this morning to see this, and this is Brendan Murphy, Carlo midfielder. So the Laois wing back, Robert Pigott, had been picking him up the last two games, and Brendan Murphy is one of the best midfielders in the country, so obviously Pigott would have been told, don't give that lad an inch, you know, hang out with him if you have to, just stop him whatever way you can, within the rules, and if you break the rules you get a free, and that's just the way Gaelic football is. You're allowed to break the rules, you just, there's consequences for breaking the rules. So defenders obviously play on that line between breaking the rules and not getting sent off, and trying to keep one of the best players on the opposition, probably arguably the best player on the opposition team, quiet. And I think Pigott did that on Sunday. I think Murphy was in the game, but you're not going to keep him exactly quiet. He scored an absolute screamer off his left foot, which Pigott actually stopped tackling him for. It was almost like, if you want to try it from there, buddy, I'll let you. And then Murphy scores, yeah. It, like, I mean, but that was a brilliant score. So, like, I mean, these things are going on the field, and, like, I mean, you're going to get dogged out of it. And we've talked about targeting players, and look at Lee Keegan and Dear McConnelly, and look at all the players. And this isn't a new phenomenon. The trash talking is maybe a little bit of a new phenomenon, but good players being targeted is going on since I was under 12, basically. And that's the way it works. So Robert wrote on Instagram after winning it, he wrote, Croke Park really lived up to its expectations, and then hashtag sorry Brendan. So don't know if Robert is saying sorry for dogging you for two games, Brendan, or sorry that you lost. I don't know, it's a bit of gentle ribbing, I would describe that. I wouldn't think it's being classless or being in any way obnoxious. It's a young fella who's only on the Laois panel, very young fella only on the Laois panel, and maybe a bit of excitement that he did well on Brendan Murphy,
given, like, the main job on
given
the
main
panel,
job, like, yeah. Main job, and it's a picture of him lifting the cup. And we know now the social media, and Brendan should know better than anybody about going to town on social media after you do something good, because the Carlow lads all did it after getting promoted. Anyways, I would have looked at that and thought nothing of it. Now, he put an X, like a kiss, but sure, like, I mean, the amount of texts I get from fellas with kisses on it, that's like, lads do that now, whatever it is, the new phenomenon. They do, like, I mean, it's done to wind people, doing you, Zach, too, he ever texts you, you'll get an X or a few kisses after it all the time. It took me a while to actually process, oh, this is something that's done now, is this looking for a reaction? But lads just put, anyway, maybe it's a Laois thing, because you two are looking at me.
That's the current climate, you're allowed to do that, like.
Anyways, X's at the end of stuff isn't surprising to me, but anyways. So Brendan obviously got very offended by this, and he tweeted, this man mauled me for two solid games. Mauled me.
Was in Derry, mauled is actually what the physicalisation of an X, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
God, I'm now really confused. Right, so this man mauled me for two solid games. Was taken off the first day because he got a yellow for persistent fouling. Didn't want to play football. Was on the winning team, yet he feels the need to put this on social media. Disrespectful, to say the Laois. I don't know what to say. I'm really disappointed with Brendan Murphy there for trying to make a big issue out of that, saying it's disrespectful and it's bad, like making out that this has been a bad winner. It's a young fella with a tweet. If anything, I would say Brendan should stop acting like a baby and take his beating like a man and stop drawing attention. You're the experienced player here, the 27, 28 year old, one of the best midfielders in the country, and you're reacting to something a young fella has put on Instagram. You're like, I mean, you should be above that level, and you've lost the final. I see that coming across as sour grapes rather than the Laois fella coming across as a classless winner, which is what Brendan's trying to twist it into.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, actually. When I first saw it, I thought it was a bit unnecessary from your man Pickett. Like, it's kind of just a bit stupid. Like, I mean, if he was going to have a particular go there, I think what he probably should have done was hashtag this is our All-Ireland, which I thought would have been quite funny, given how Carlo talked about how getting promoted was their All-Ireland, at least winning this, because, let's face it, neither of them are going to do anything in the summer.
No.
So I thought that would have been funny enough. He's name-checking a minute. We have to presume it's Brendan Murphy's talking about and not sorry Brendan, who's a buddy of his from Carlo, that they had a bet on who won the game, or they were having a bit of crack during the week. So we'll assume it is Brendan Murphy he's talking about, and we'll say, look, a little bit unnecessary from Pickett, but
Do we want players to have a bit of crack or have a bit of, like, I mean, do we want them to have a bit of personality, or are you meant to just go, have a unlucky Carlo, you are outstanding opponents who, you know, well, we just happen to be better than all. Do you basically want every player to be like Jim Gavin?
Well, I think that
is that what we want?
I think it's up to supporters to have the crack. I'd say managers probably afterwards are like, oh, that's like, would you just cop on? There's no point in rubbing anyone's noses in it if that's what you're trying to do, because we are going to have to play them down the line. Look, Brendan Murphy responding to it is a bit childish, really, to be honest, and he should know a bit better. He's a grown adult. Like, my attitude would be, let the child have his day out and we'll see the next time we play
exactly
how we get on.
Yeah, that's little apples will grow again. That's the way that kind of attitude would be. That little fella now, if he thinks that he's going to mention me in a tweet and we'll see the next time I mark him and hit him for five and laugh at him, I don't think it deserves a big long I'm offended
by
this.
Look, you know my opinion on social media, so let's not drag this out any longer than we have to.
Definitely doesn't deserve that, and I can't believe that Brendan Murphy got to where he is in the game without being man marked. I mean,
it sounds like he was the best first time he's been tagged for two games in a row.
Like, and especially when, like, no disrespect, when you're playing for Carlo, you're looking, like, you know, at their main players, and, you know, three or four ones you really have to target, like, and he's one, just man mark him, go wherever he goes.
But you're looking, we played Carlo in the championship a number of years ago, and Brendan Murphy was the man that we got. Conor Gillespie picked him up in the middle of the field, and his job was to mark Brendan Murphy in the middle of the field and not give him any freedom,
and the rest of us will go and win the game.
And he did a job in it. So look, thankfully Conor didn't put anything on social media because he's a sensible fella.
Yeah, and the ironic thing is he didn't want to play football. He's just persistent.
But no defenders want to play football. He should try playing in the full forward line, marking a few cornerbacks.
Imagine marking Johnny Cooper for a day. But, like, I mean, the ironic thing is that Carlo's whole game plan is based around stopping the opposition playing football and getting in aggressive tackles and surrounding a man and not allowing them play football. Like, I mean, there's just so much irony. The reason that really, really pissed me off is because Leash, you know, went through a very bad few days last week. I think Leash GAA got dragged in, and the whole PR surrounding Leash football, through no fault of their own, through no fault of Leash GAA's, got dragged into obviously a stupid tweet that was sent by a player. And it reflected really badly on Leash GAA as a whole, even though they had no control over that tweet. So just for Brendan to try and paint Leash GAA in a bad light again for a really harmless tweet has really got my back up, when Brendan is a big boy now and, you know, cop on.
Yeah, well, I think, look, when you're being man-marked in a game, you're playing middle of the field, you have a guy tagging you. Look, there's no doubt it's frustrating. It is annoying, particularly when it is persistent. But that's what the officials are there for. They're there to do a job. This guy, as Brendan Murphy said, was booked in the first game and had to be taken off for persistent fouling. Well done, Brendan. You kept working, you worked him out, and you won that battle.
Yeah.
So yesterday, or in the final at the weekend, you know, maybe you have to try something different. It wasn't going Carlo's way. I would have suggested that Murphy should have been stuck in the full forward line. And if they want to send a half back in to mark in the full forward line, let's isolate Brendan inside and try and get the ball into him. You know, you have to come up with a different solution to meet the different problems that you face. You can't just be straitjacketed by a certain way of playing or a certain playbook, particularly when the opposition can sometimes throw a spanner in the works.
Yeah, this podcast could be a bit long now because I wanted to finish it there. This is very short, even though it's on Dear McConnelly. Jim Gavin didn't know that Dear McConnelly wants the rest. Jim Gavin is kind of saying that Jim Gavin saying, I'm giving him a rest. Now, Christy O'Connor had in the Sunday Times says Dear McConnelly's decision that he wanted a rest. And now Jim Gavin said after the game is that his status at the moment is that both Dermot and I agreed that a rest was in his best interest or something like that. So, like, I mean, this is a strange one for me. Connolly played against Mayo. He's not playing for Vincent's now. The talk is Pat Gilroy tried to get him to play with the hurlers. He's not playing with anybody. So we don't know. It sounds to me like it's Dermot Connolly's decision. I don't know why Jim maybe is trying to I don't know what Jim is trying to do, really, because maybe he just wants it to be known that he is part of this decision rather than
decided. The reality is maybe he doesn't know, and maybe Connolly doesn't know exactly what he wants to do. He's obviously, look, if he's not enjoying his football and he doesn't want to be there, well then he's right for himself to take a break for it. He's been involved at that level of football and playing very, very long seasons with his club, and sometimes you just get fed up and you don't want to do the grind, and you have to have a hunger to play at the top level, and you have to have a hunger to compete. You saw how competitive that game was at the weekend. If you're in any way kind of not up for it, you're going to get found out, and if that's the way Dermot Connolly feels, well then he's perfectly entitled to do that, and I think fair play to him for making a decision for himself and not just... You can see it's obviously been very hard because he hasn't just come out and made it.
Yeah, exactly. And fingers crossed he'll be back for the championship for all GA fans, and for Jim Gavin, who was asked, will he be back for the championship? And Jim says, please God. So he's Jim's praying for his return. Dublin will need him, no matter how good they are. They'll definitely need him. Right, we'll come back and we'll take a look at the Division 1 and 2 finals.
Dermot, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah.
Why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me? I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
One thing that jumped out at me yesterday was with Galway's performance was their use of their bench. What were they thinking? Like, I mean, this is a really intense game plan. It wasn't as defensive as I thought it was going to be in Croke Park. I think that when they attacked, they often had a lot of numbers up there. They actually reminded me a bit of a basketball team in that nearly all the team defended, but when they attacked, they had an awful lot of men moved up the field as well. Like, you know, it almost is a copy in basketball tactics, because there's a lot of hand passing at the start of the game. They were able to use Comer a little bit with kick passes, and I was like, geez, they have to balance really kind of good here. And then they completely lost that kind of style, because like the first 50 minutes I thought they had it perfect. There was space, there was kick passes, there was numbers up in the half forward line.
They had territory.
They
had a bit of territory, and also early in the game you would expect that there's lots of energy in the legs, and they're able to make that the transition from defence to attack much quicker, which meant they were able to break the line a bit better and get the ball in, you know, get the ball further up the pitch so that they were in kicking distance of Comer, and Comer could get it in the danger zone. I think as the game wore on, Galway quite badly struggled. In the second half, they struggled in the middle third of the field, I thought.
So that's why not refreshing their team is just inexplicable, really, isn't it? Earlier, like, okay, so the first sub came on was Gary O'Donnell for Johnny Heaney, 61 minutes. For me, that should be maybe your fourth sub. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I would
then
agree.
After that, you have Tom Flynn coming on for Cook in 67 minutes. Mm. Tom Flynn, a fellow with huge energy around that middle third. Cook was out on his feet. You have Patrick Sweeney coming on 67 minutes. And that's for Paul Conroy. And Adrian Varley coming on for Shane Walsh, 69 minutes. And that's only using four.
Yeah, and also...
What's going on there?
Taking off Shane Walsh when they needed...
Yeah, and also, also when you're behind and you're taking off Conroy and Walsh, sort of blunting your attack as well. But look, it's hard to be overly critical of Galway,
definitely not. Because I don't want to be critical of them after today. I think they're on the cusp of actually being a real good team.
Oh, they definitely are. I think... The two guys in the middle of the field did very well. Well, they were wearing 8-9, Cook and Duggan. They covered a lot of ground. Conroy had a decent outing, although he wasn't... he kicked a great point in the first half. But he's the type of guy that Galway probably need to get him attacking a little bit more. He needs to be handling the ball a little bit further up the field, because he's capable of getting scores from distance, and he's a reasonably decent creative player. Shane Walsh is one player who... Galway just needs so much more from.
Yeah.
I think he's a guy who's just, anytime I've seen him, he just completely flatters to deceive. He gets the ball and he looks just like an unbelievable player. An unbelievable player, glides across the ground, can go left and right. But how often do we see him? He gets the ball and he dances around in front of his man, but he goes nowhere, and he doesn't make anything happen. He ends up getting the ball, dances around, looks really good, twists and turns, and then hand passes the ball backwards or goes backwards. He's the type of guy that Galway need making ground and breaking tackles and beating people.
See, I don't
he needs
think
to beat people.
He's not. I don't think this game plan suits him.
But is he allowed to beat people? Is
I don't
the question?
I don't think it does. He's explosive pace. What Shane Walsh is brilliant at is running in space. You don't get space with that system. His other thing is brilliant at is taking the ball, going past someone after. Say you kick it into Comer, he could collect it off him and be broken through a line. He's got left and right. He's a very good finisher. But him floating up around the midfield,
he kicked an unbelievable point off his left foot, and he kicked
off the ground.
In fairness, he deserves huge credit for that one. Like, that's his weaker foot, kicking it free off the ground from that angle.
He's got outrageous talent. But him popping up around midfield on a ball with Dublin with bodies back, he's not really sure what to do in that scenario.
Is he not the man to transition though? Like, he can take a pie two or three.
Yeah, but he's not really back in there then. Like, so it's confusing how they're using him. You know, I think he needs to be in beside Comer. I think he needs to simplify his role for him.
Because I think
he tried
so too,
a few kick passes yesterday into Comer, and he made a balls of them because he's not a playmaker. I think you just have to break it down for him a little bit easier, because at the moment he's out around midfield and he's a bit all over the place.
Yeah, look, again, it's not a criticism of Shane Walsh necessarily. Like, his talent is undoubted. Like, his athleticism, his balance, his skill level off left and right. Now, his finishing is absolutely atrocious.
Yeah, it has been throughout the league.
It has been terrible. And, like, unless he improves that for the championship, Galway are not going to make that step on. Like, even if he, I think he was something like he's in the 20%. Like, he's in the mid-20s for conversion rate.
Terrible. I think it's something like 3 or 4 out of 15 or 16.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's just simply not good enough. Like, I mean, only for the undoubted talent he has, and, like, we can all see the spark that he has. I mean, if you were looking at a guy in your forward line that was doing that, he'd never play. He'd be like, how can we keep looking at this lad kicking the ball wide? So he has an undoubted talent, but there's no point in him doing what he's doing at the minute, because he's not contributing enough. Enough to that Galway team. And he is the one player, along with Comer, they're getting performances out of a lot of players that are good players, you know, obviously good county players, very fit, very strong, very athletic, working to the system, all those sorts of things. But the likes of Comer, Conroy, Walsh and Brannigan to a lesser extent, they're the ones that can provide that spark, that, you know, that thing that's going to be that creative force for Galway and get the scores from him, make things happen up front. And Walsh just needs to do more. Whatever it is, the Galway management team need to reassess at the end of this league campaign, and fair play to them, a really positive campaign for them. But they need to look at how they're using Shane Walsh and how do they get more out of him.
Yeah.
And he needs to spend a lot of time practicing kicking the ball over the bar.
He was dropped for the final, actually, and he only played because it looks like Sean Armstrong must have got injured, because he didn't even come on Armstrong, and he was going really well. So you can take it that Armstrong got injured and Walsh got the start. But, like, I mean, for me, yesterday, when it was so obvious that Dublin became obsessed with Comer and had their sweeper standing in front of him, you put Shane Walsh beside him, he's got a one-on-one with his man. Because Dublin aren't going to go down the road of double sweepers. Do you know, so when Comer is such a threat, if you've got another danger like Walsh in there beside him, or Sean Armstrong or these fellas, that's a huge plus for Galway, because a sweeper can't cover two. And if you've good diagonal balls, one of them is getting one-on-ones. And if you want to get obsessed with Comer, there's huge joy for somebody else that's in there beside him.
Yeah, well, with the pace that Walsh has, like Galway in a field, in a pitch like Croke Park, on a, you know, dry sod, hard ground, the pace that he's able to move across the ground, you're trying to isolate him in space.
Yeah.
Because he's going to beat 9 players out of 10 in a foot race. And then he should have, with that space, one-on-one. He has the ability to go by them.
There was a brilliant moment in the second half under the Cusack stand where Shane Walsh had the ball from the half back line, and who was tracking him? Only Mannion. And I was like, who wins here?
Some race,
and
it was
a dead heat. It looked like there was no one gaining yards. I love when two speed demons pair off against each other. Anyway, sorry for interrupting you.
But there needs to be a directive, I think, from the management to allow him just to take men on constantly. Because if he gets a run on anybody, 10 players out of 10, if he's got a run on them, they won't stop him. So he should be allowed to lose the ball 30% of the time just to keep getting at players all the time, because he'll make have it happen when he does?
Well, I think he doesn't trust himself physically in terms of the physicality of the game. I don't think he trusts himself taking the ball into contact or trying to drive through tackles, because now look, that's just the type of player he is. Like, you can see Comer takes it in, he looks for contact, or he's able to break the tackle and leans into men. Walsh is kind of leaning away from men, he's trying to evade tackles. He's just a different type of player, so you have to try and develop an attacking style or a setup up front which, you know, allows him to flourish as well as Comer. And to be honest with you, imagine having that armory. Like, imagine having those two guys and thinking this is a problem. I tell you one thing, yeah. Like, the talent that they have and the pace and runners that they have coming from deep, they just have to find something for Walsh.
And the Cara Finn lad's obviously going to come back. Cara Finn are an unbelievable team. No one from Cara Finn absolutely guaranteed their position. Silk would have been, but he's actually not committing to Galway this year. The defender, he'd be one of the better kind of marking defenders. Up front, you might have Ian Burke in there. You know, Micheál Lundy is very fast on the break. You know, but there's no Farahers could be
If you were to look at Ian Burke with the way he played that target man role in the club final, and I know it's a different level, but if you have a guy like him buzzing in and around Comer and creating all that sort of movement, and with the good hands he has, like, he's always on the move, he's a brilliant outlet, and then you have guys coming off him like Brannigan and Walsh coming off, because he has good hands and he has good vision. Like, that to me could potentially be a really good mix for Galway, because Barry McHugh in the corner has shown that he has to be in the team. He gets through a lot of work, he's a decent player, he kicked a brilliant point in the first half, and his free taking is superb, and you need a reliable free taker. So, like, you're looking at McHugh and Comer, like, it's like they have an embarrassment of riches, really.
They do. And like, I mean, the point I'm making about the Cara Finn lads is that maybe they'll trust their bench a little bit more, because that bench has to start coming in on 55 minutes, like, regardless of how a lad is playing, especially around that middle third. Just get fresh legs in there. Everybody knows that now. I'm surprised that you're at a stage in the modern game where someone's not playing this style of play and not emptying their bench, maybe doesn't trust him. Michael Daly has to come back in. They have an embarrassment of riches up front. If only they can just tweak that. I like Burke. I like Comer on the edge of the square. Burke maybe in a straight line out in front of him, where he's breaking first and taking someone with him, and then Comer. You know, there's all sorts of little things, but the focus needs to be more now on what we can do up there, and how many men do we actually need back, and how many men can we kind of have. I say leave three up. I think the balance for Galway is leave three up there and bring everybody, let everybody else come back, and have the three of them up there in a straight line, that they're coming out to the 45. You know what I mean? That it's not necessarily there are three of them on the full forward line with the huge gap. You can use the three in a different way, where it's 1, 2 and your third man is outside the 45 and they can break left and right, all three of them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, there's different ways of doing it, of leaving three up there and not saying, well, Jesus, there's an awful distance up to, you know, it doesn't have to be as rigid as that.
Well, will they want to tweak anything now though, after such a good campaign and then taking Dublin?
I think when they see Comer, the damage he did in 17 minutes, I think they'll have to see that video and go, how can we
keep doing that?
How can we get more out of this, out of Comer in that dangerous area?
Agreed.
They have to.
Agreed. But look at the scoreline. They scored 14 points.
Yeah.
Like, that's not good enough to win a large majority of games come championship football.
Yeah.
That's just the
bottom
line.
To score goals against Dublin. Like, they didn't have any goal chance. Dublin had the goal chances, really. Oh, we have to talk about Mannion's first goal chance in the game. What, Garrett Bradshaw just runs. I had to rewind it to see, is this a set move? Because I kind of missed the throw. What happened from the throw-in. So I rewound it back and then realised it's not a set move. Dublin just happened to win it, and Bradshaw's ran in under a break and left Mannion in the half-hour line.
He backed his midfielders to win it.
He must have really been confident that Galway were winning that throw-in. Unreal stuff. But Galway or Dublin had the goal chances. I don't remember Galway goal chances, did they?
And no, and in fairness, Lavelle made an unbelievable save from Dean
brilliant
Brock
save. And
half.
That was almost a Cara Finn-esque move. That was a beautiful hand passing move.
It would have been an absolutely sensational goal, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was. It was outstanding. So it's hard to know. Like, I mean, Dublin, we see, this is the thing, the tactics often when Dublin play teams is around the other team and what they've done against Dublin. We know what Dublin are like. It's been said about them before. 14 men in the 50th minute and it's a draw match, and you think Dublin could be in big trouble here.
At that
and
stage it's almost it was Galway's
to but lose. It's almost that was the kick in the arse Dublin needed. That was they maybe needed that spark to go, we could lose this game now instead of, you know what I mean? You talk about motivation and stuff like that, but they just grew in stature. Conor Callaghan showed a lot of leadership on the kickouts. The kickouts, I tweeted out a freeze frame of the Dublin kickouts at one stage, and all the forwards were bunched in.
That one was brilliant when you could see it from behind the goals.
Behind the goals. And you wonder why can't these League Sundays just do a bit more analysis? There's so much stuff goes on now with this movement. So it's always the Dublin half forward line and they're all keeping it in. And then there was another one, another fella tweeted me that I hadn't noticed, where they're all bunched and all the forwards go left and Cluxton goes right. Like, it's all beautiful, simple, beautiful stuff.
It's simple. It's good forward play. That's what it is. It's you know, make decoy runs and let one man get a bit of space. But, you know, it's no accident that on that kick out where all the Dublin defenders moved to one wing, the guy who didn't move to that wing, who was the first support runner off the receiver, was James McCarthy. So it's obvious that they want him to be second receiver, because they know he has legs and he can keep going and he'll break a tackle when he's coming at speed.
That's brilliant, isn't it? Because often when you do see that half forward line from Dublin actually breaking out to get it, there's always someone then catching off the shoulder. Isn't it lovely when you see something so simple working like that? Like,
and that's,
you
know, them just reacting to Galway going man on man. Like, a lot of teams now are going zonally and stuff, but then it's like, okay, you want to do this? Well, here's our plan. To get around that.
So it's the Dublin defenders there. Did I say it was the Dublin forwards? It's the Dublin defenders, obviously.
It's forward play, though, was Keane was saying, to try and free up space.
But you have to give Galway a decent amount of credit in that they did compete in the early stages of the game. They competed quite well, even on Dublin kickouts. When it went out in the air, they were alive on breaks and they were winning. The impression I would have, anyway, without the statistics in front of me, is that they won when it was contested around the middle. Certainly in the early stages of the game, Galway were coming out on top of that. I thought as the game wore on, it seemed that Dublin were, you know, starting to get on top, or maybe they were just tackling with a bit more ferocity there, that they weren't allowing Galway to get up the field. So that was the big difference from the first half and second half. Galway just couldn't really get a consistent territory in the game to allow them to play a more conventional attacking football. It was all kind of counter attack stuff, and the longer the game wore on, even with the extra man, you know, there was only kind of going to be one winner with the way the pattern of the game was going.
Yeah, no, I think it was. But you have to say about Galway, well, there's been other teams like Derry and like Cork who've gotten to league finals and got their arses handed to them by Dublin. Yeah. Mayo looked like, or Galway looked like a team now that Dublin might have to be concerned about in the next 4 or 5 years. That, like, I mean, they have enough tradition and history and bottle and spirit and physicality that, you know, I'd say Dublin are thinking this is another team now that we have to be concerned about, like Kerry Mayo.
That was
Mayo.
The big thing. The physicality of the Galway players was probably one of the most impressive things, you know, in terms of competing with Dublin, that they were well able for
a match for them. Yeah. And that's the thing, and that's one thing we always say about Mayo and the Kerry aren't quite there yet. Galway matched them that area now. They did. They definitely did. Big enough men. And a lot of that thing with Dublin is that they're not blowing you away. You know what I mean? That you're getting enough, that you've just physically big enough to be able to compete with these guys, because Dublin are just naturally big, strong men. So, look, fair play to Galway. And listen, as my prediction's looking fairly rosy here now, one or two of these little tweaks, if you want me to go up and do a session or two with them and just get this forward play tweaked, then we could all be going back west of the Shannon with the Sam next year. And my prediction, I'll be hoisted up on shoulders here. Anyways, what a load of nonsense I'm talking. Right, the one before it was a great game, lads, and this was 4-12 to 4-16. This was a real throwback to back when the days where teams just went for it. And I think
it was like a Leinster Championship match.
A little bit, it was innocent. Now, having said that, like, you can talk about this like a lot and say, oh, this was back to one-on-one. It only was at certain stages. There were stages where they both had a lot of players back. The thing about it was they were committing bodies forward, and there was an opportunity. If you attacked fast, you could get one-on-ones the other side, but if you attacked slowly, they were filtering back. It's not like they didn't want to get back, it's just they didn't have full-time men back there. So, like, I mean, I think both teams struck a really nice balance in the modern game where, like, I mean, if you look at the first Cavan goal from Bradley, like, I don't ever want to see a goal like that ever again. This was collecting a goal in the 45, turning your man and running in and scoring. Like, that's obscene. Like, that can't happen. Yeah. So, like, I mean, I want it to be a bit easier for modern forward and not have it all crowded out, but I also don't want to see that.
Yeah.
Ah, look, it was a good bit of play. You're being harsh. But I think...
Do you get my point? It's not like I don't want to see it. It was obviously nice to see, but...
In that particular instance, the Galway cover defenders were too slow to react. Roscommon cover defenders were too slow to react.
It was the same for the penalty too. Yeah. Like, the same...
What they were doing was they were very much following man-to-man. But it's like, you know, you can really simplify the game for a guy and just say, look, mark your man and take all decision-making out of his hands. But on a couple of the instances where Cavan got gold in the first half... Roscommon defenders should have spotted where the danger zone was and covered it off. I mean, even though I'm not sure who the Roscommon cover defender was for Bradley's goal, but even when Bradley was striking the ball, the cover defender was actually closer to him than the guy who was chasing him down, and all he had to do was react to Bradley turning his man.
Yeah.
Two seconds before he did, and he would have just been standing in front of him, worst case a point. So that sometimes is the difference between the really top players and, I suppose, difference between Division 1 and Division 2 in terms of closing out those gaps and spotting danger early and making the right decision and putting yourself in a position where it's more difficult for the opposition to get a score.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, turning your man under 45, Conan, and like, you should be leaving your man in a non-dangerous place and coming across and making him kick the point there rather than...
Or make him make another pass.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You always have to err on the side of what's the least worst thing that can happen, you know?
I mean, it's good positive play. I saw people crying about being bad defending, and it was. Like, it wasn't good defending by Harney in the first one. But it shouldn't be a goal when you get by one player. Like, you know, you should have a lot more to do.
Yeah.
Take it past one player and you're in for a goal. Every time, you're right, it happened for the penalty. McPhedy went by Daly, I think. Went straight in, got fouled. Yeah, and then even the third goal, it was McVitie again, but it was just a pop. They won the kick out, and then he just ran. Nobody followed him, and there's nobody as Kane pointed out. It's what we talked about Kerry before. There's nobody covering them and sort of taking responsibility to say, right, I'll come across and concede the point or whatever.
The thing about both these teams is there's a lot of natural players on the field. Like, I mean, Roscommon have a lot of naturally skilled players that can see passes, and it's difficult to describe. You just say they're proper footballers, a lot of them, you know what I mean? They can throw the ball around, they can give it in when it's on, like the ball into Cottle Craig for that goal. They're just able to play football. Like, I mean, and you don't win underage without having that confidence and that ability to be able to do that. And I think that's just Roscommon have natural ballers, and like, I mean, you can't coach that into a lad to give the pass at the right time and not take it into contact and to hold off, wait, there's movement in front of it, you know, like, I mean, this there's a collection of good players there.
Yeah, there is. And I think what you have to look at is these teams have played each other a number of times over the last few years, and it's always been very, very tight. And Roscommon have come on top of almost all the encounters. I think they've beaten them all the time, haven't
seven
they?
7 of 8. Yeah.
So I think sometimes you can have a situation where familiarity breeds contempt, and we could have had, you know, a sort of an ill-tempered, low-scoring game. But both of these sets of players played with great honesty and effort, and I think it was a case of both teams sort of fancied their chances of winning the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, played with positivity and on the front foot, and I think that's to be commended. Part of the reason probably why the Roscommon guys weren't able to get across on the cover defence there for Bradley's goal particularly was because they were after trying to drive forward on the attack, and they were getting back kind of late into position. It was kind of like, right, I have my man here, I'm going to try and catch my breath.
Yeah.
And you know, one on one, and a guy who slipped and he's in for goal. But that happened at both ends of the field. So
they both went for it.
Yeah, I think that's to be commended. Like, we can talk about certain decisions that maybe the both teams will, I'm sure, when they re-evaluate and they do their video work on the game, they'd spot these mistakes and they say, look, you know, you need to get across here a bit quicker on the cover, you need to spot this earlier. And guys will kind of, hopefully, both sets of players will learn from that. But you have to remember, they're developing. They're Division 2 for a reason, and they're now hoping to make the step up again next season and during the summer to elevate themselves to play at a higher standard. So, you know, I think I'd give them credit for the fact that they both went out to try and win the game. I would much prefer to see my team going out like that. If I was from either of those counties, if I was from Cavan, I would be happy to support that team.
Yeah, me too. And that's the thing. And we've always said that we're not necessarily ever complaining about defensive teams if Carlow play Dublin. But if Carlow play Laois or if Roscommon play Cavan and you're on that similar level, is it not better to go out and try and beat them than actually try and contain a team that you don't need to really contain? You're as good as them. Go out and play them.
Yeah, I think the Cavan backroom team might be looking at some of the way they set up, and like, they had a lot of men back at stages, but they weren't really doing much. Like, they were just standing there stationary, yeah. And it was just one ball over the top to Lennon usually, who won it, and then Roscommon had men coming in, and Cavan weren't really doing. They brought men back, but it was almost lip service to some sort of structure where they came back to the 45 and still gave them that space to kick. And
yeah, it didn't look like there was a huge amount of intensity in the game. Like if someone wanted to pick out a kick pass, yeah, he was given all the time in the world to kind of do that, which is a surprise. But I saw a tweet. Who is it from? From a fella who writes for the Anglo-Celt, a Fitzpatrick fella. You see him on Twitter. I can't think of his name. You're both looking at me. I thought you'd help me out there. But he, I think he's the editor of the Anglo-Celt. But he was saying this idea that the Black Death is gone. Cavan Run have been playing a more expansive game for the last 2 years, he thought. They were top scorers in division 2 years ago. Now, you can be top scorers and play a very defensive brand. I don't think that proves anything. But I did see some quotes from Matty McGleenan before he took over Cavan, and his thoughts for Cavan was that he absolutely did not like defensive football. He liked teams that expressed themselves. And maybe he's in his second year now, and this, you know, he wants to get a team playing a lot more positively, because that Cavan team was playing very positively and was forwards left up, and I thought Shawnee Johnson played really well even when he came on, because he's playing in an attacking game, and he looked like a real good player. We know McVitie is a top class player. I was saying on the Gerard McKiernan was very much out of the game, which is unlike him. Keane Mackey's really good. They have industrious type of players. Like I said last Thursday, they don't have that hot shot in the inside line that's going to transform them. They're not going to be a top tier team, but they have a lot of good, very good players, and players that can play football.
Yeah, they do. And look, I think the difference between the teams really in the end was that Roscommon just had more quality forwards,
yeah,
in terms of scoring,
yeah,
forwards,
yeah.
And look, apart from that, it was a very even contest, and with both teams playing, you know, some lovely football at times, some bad football at times, and some mistakes being made, but overall, yeah, pretty good. And I thought it was nice to see Cathal Craig coming in there, and he's an excellent player, and again, just that little bit of experience and know how near the end of a game to be able to isolate himself one on one and make the move at the right time, and
lovely finish,
you know, and to finish well. And that was just a touch of class that, to be fair, Cavan didn't have up front for long enough in the game. I mean, they played McVitie kind of inside in the full. He seemed to be playing more so in the full forward line for the majority of the game, because he was the man that was able to make things happen for them. But they would need to get more out of the rest of their forwards if they're to make any inroads, certainly in the Ulster Championship.
Yeah, OK. Up next, we'll take a look at the last two divisions.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
well,
at me.
Out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Don't have a huge amount to say about this Armagh Fermanagh game. It was one of the games that I was watching and wouldn't really grip me now, to be honest. Now, you could say the Division 4 one, it was only because Laois, it kind of had my interest, whereas I'm not sure, we'll ask the two of you what you thought of it as neutrals. But, like, I mean, the one thing I took away from this game is Armagh trying to play a kicking game, doing it really well, good diagonal balls. Murnin is a absolutely outstanding player, a player that you'd love to have on your team. And Fermanagh playing Fermanagh have to be the most dour team in the country, I think, at the moment. Them and Carlow are probably the most teams that stuck in the time warp from 2011, from the Jim McGuinness kind of let's get loads of men back trying to win. A lot of these teams get an awful lot of scores from frees. I'm not sure why that is. So McGeaney said after the match that people would probably, this is why Armagh don't get many frees, so he's saying people would probably point out that it's our coaching and that it's our style of play, and he says, and that's fair enough, there's probably going to be something in that. So just wondering, like, how McGeaney's style of play isn't conducive to winning frees, but Fermanagh's is, I suppose. Like, I mean, these hand passing games, you can get kind of fouled.
Yeah, I suppose you have a lot of runners.
You're trying to
take it through the tackle. You're trying to go through very narrow gaps. And I suppose sometimes when the guy is coming at full tilt and he's trying to break the line, you know, referees, it's a 50-50 call whether it's a free in or a free out sometimes.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're trying to play say a more expansive kicking game, you're generally trying to hit
avoid contact.
So yeah, look, it was sort of an interesting game. It started off quite surprisingly for me. I hadn't seen either of these teams playing up to the final, and a lot of kicking in the first few minutes of the game. Fermanagh went very, very direct. Armagh obviously were going direct as well, playing a lot of high diagonal ball into the full forward line. And I suppose the difference was that Mernan was winning it more often than not inside for Armagh, and Fermanagh, the first few balls that went in, they, you know, Armagh defenders came out with it. So really it was no surprise that Fermanagh reverted to a different style of running the ball.
But another thing was that Sean Quigley was given those diagonal balls and then he got black carded. Like, it's almost like their whole game plan was based on maybe Sean Quigley deciding himself to do this, or why did somebody else not take it on them?
I think the two Quigleys inside are good target men.
But Quigley was out. He was out early.
Like, yeah, Sean Quigley was playing a little bit further out. But like, they were trying to hit Seamus Quigley early on with, and a couple of balls went in. He just didn't win them. That can happen. You can be beaten to a couple of balls. But after that, the supply pretty much dried up from a kicking perspective for Fermanagh, and they reverted to running the ball. Look, you can say maybe that's a decision they made on the pitch. You know, we're trying it here. It's not working. Let's carry it. And, you know, you can't blame them. If you're playing in the inside forward line and the lads kick in three or four balls to you and you don't win any of them, I mean, you can throw your hands up in the air all you want at the bad passes coming in, but ultimately when the ball comes into your zone, you have a responsibility to your teammates to feck and try and win it. So it's not surprising. Now, if a team is coached in a certain way, they will obviously work the ball a little better and they'll continue to try and do it, maybe take a little bit more care in the foot pass in. The difference really between the teams at times is that Armagh in Rory Grugan had the best foot passer on the pitch, and some of the crossfield passes he gave, some of the little disguised foot passes he gave, a very, very creative
natural player.
Yeah, a real natural player. And, you know, Armagh just played probably a little bit nicer football at times, but right up until the end of the game, Fermanagh were well in it, and only for a sort of a cheap goal they conceded, they could have snuck victory in the end.
Yeah, they're a well coached team, you'd have to say, Armagh, aren't they? Like, they're a really well coached team in that they'll run it so far and then they'll be making sure they're looking for the diagonal pass and they're looking for the. They're almost. Well, maybe I'm just biased because they're coached in the way I would like to kind of have a team play, whether not saying that's the right way or the wrong way. I saw Aaron Kernan's tweet had said that it's a more comfortable victory than the scoreline suggests, and that's kind of what I thought as well. Yeah. I thought the scoreline flattered Fermanagh a little bit.
But it is the right way to play because they had Mernan in there and it was getting the most out of him. And like, you know, the Keane mentioned those passes from Grugan. Like, that's the key. As good as a target man as Mernan is, like, those passes made him unmarkable. Like, you're worrying so much about what he can do in the air or getting it short, but then when you're playing these balls to the other side of him for him just to pick up handy, you can't do anything about it. And yeah, it is the coaching, and that's probably coming from McGeaney. Like, that's the way he played, coming out of centre back and then picking these diagonal balls into the forwards of old. But I think the Sean Quigley thing was ridiculous. Like, obviously they had some sort of plan to use him as a footballer out the field, and then getting that black card. I mean,
he could have no complaints. So he was stupid. Why did he do it? And I genuinely felt so sorry for him, even though I knew he was stupid, because it's the first few minutes of a national final and he looked distraught. But you can't do a Johnny Cooper and plead your innocence when it was a clear black.
Just desperately disappointing, both for him, for Fermanagh, and also for a neutral trying to watch the game.
Just one thing on that, Sean Quigley looked very fit.
Yeah,
and maybe if they were trying something new, that he was breaking and he was giving in balls into Seamus, like, Fermanagh will be livid that that happened, because that's a big game for that, for them not to see what Sean is like in that role.
Yeah, it is. It's disappointing for them. One thing anyway going forward for Armagh in the Championship is, I know we spoke about Fermanagh winning a lot of frees, but some of the Armagh tackling was a little bit over the top. They need to tighten that up, and they were going on with some sort of stupid macho man stuff as well.
That's, you could see them at the course with Armagh,
but it's just complete and utter nonsense. Like, do they realise how stupid they look going on with it? Like, and it doesn't work. Like, you're just giving away frees. I mean, I'd say if Fermanagh had ended up winning that game, they would have just been laughing at them, going, what are these lads at? All this macho man stuff, and then I take the ball, go past you, you just fouled me, and I'll kick the free over the bar. Like, what are you on about? It's just, I just don't get it. Like, I just think it's the stupidest, most ridiculous thing. But
no, I agree, and I actually see that kind of those macho men are showing you a sign of weakness, because they're, you're obviously highly strung and you think you're the big hard man, so it's not too hard to take the piss out of you. Do you know what I mean? I think you might, these lads take themselves too seriously, so like giving away fouls and goading them into maybe fouling you then, you know what I mean, that they're not as hard as they think they are, and suddenly then they'll try and prove that they're hard, and you have them all over the place then.
Notorious hard man Colm Coyle, when he was over us, he always said that he used to be most wary of the lads who'd say nothing and just give him a look.
Well, yeah, exactly. Or Bernard Flynn, who just boxed the head off you if you put your hand on him. Like, I mean, but these are lads, wouldn't, like, when you, the more you hear about even Peter Canavan and these lads aren't going around as hard men, but Jesus, they can handle themselves.
Now, Stevie was fond of a challenge match against Armagh. There was used to be fair old dust up. Stevie, if anyone went near Stevie, anyone, even a defender, put a hand on Stevie, they get a fair smack off.
Go away. Stevie was only 11 stone back then. Is this back in the 90s? No, he keeps telling
us. No, I was too young to be playing.
Oh, no, this is when you came onto the scene. Yeah, no, listen, I'd say he's no shrinking violet, but sure, look, none of the top players were they?
No.
Johnny Cooper's not, anyway.
No. Right, Leash and Carla, lads, just to finish up with, because this feels like a marathon today with no performance of the weekend, kind of to lighten up the end of the podcast. I don't know, like, I mean, this seemed to me like it was a game of two halves. Leash were very, very impressive in the first half. Again, like, you'd be concerned as a Leash man, they almost looked, I can't see them getting out of Division 3, but you have to see the players that did look a level above that type was Ross Munnelly, Donny Kingston, John O'Loughlin. Like, Garrett Dillon was outstanding, even though he hasn't played at a higher level. But the Leash players that have come from Division 2 and to be playing in a Division 4 final, it wasn't the standard for them. And, like, you know, this is Leash minus Gary Walsh and minus Evan O'Carroll, who would be two guaranteed starters in that forward line. So it wasn't Leash's strongest team at all. But first half, very, very impressive long range scores, loads of energy. I think when they started to tire and Carlo started to dominate the kickouts in midfield, Leash looked in an awful lot of trouble in the second half. So, like, I was very concerned with 20 minutes to go, 15 minutes to go.
Yeah, Leash were definitely hanging on at certain stages of the game, and Carlo deserve great credit for the way they stuck at it. They played some horrible football at times in terms of their execution of, you know, their kick passing and their shooting in the end. They gave away a lot of turnovers that were quite unnecessary, which they'll be quite disappointed with. But they had good performance. Sean Gannon at wing forward was
very good.
Really good.
Very good. He's a good player. And they're a big physical team. They're
a
big size.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, very, very physical team. Very well conditioned as well, you'd have to say. They covered the ground very well. Just their finishing let them down. So that's something that, obviously, they've had a very successful league campaign. You know, they'll be looking to bring that into the summer and get some good performances in the summer, and then hopefully develop their game further going into Division 3 next year, because they will have to, because when the standard goes up and you're playing against better forwards, they don't need as much time to get the shot off, they don't need as much time to score. They can score from further out, they can score from tighter angles, and you can have all the men back in the world, but good forwards and teams that are well prepared and well set up will find a way to break that down. So you have to find something yourself to outscore them. You have to, your attacking play from your own perspective needs to be a bit better, and that was kind of the difference. Like, Ross Munnelly rolling back the years big time.
What
in the early
Ross
stage
Munnelly?
Of the game,
he must be 36 now. But he lives a very clean lifestyle, like, he wouldn't drink or smoke or anything, and he's pure just dedicated to football. So, like, I mean, geez, I didn't, because
he's an incredible fella, really,
I think,
isn't
Ross
he?
Bulked up a little bit too much. He looked a lot more slimline, and he almost looked like the kind of wispy player that he was in 03 or 04 or 05. He got too blocky for a while. He was a big Chester. I think he lost a bit of his athleticism and maybe even a bit of his pace, but he looked like, now it was Ross at Division 4 level, so, like, I mean, he's better than that, so he did look,
yeah,
you
he
know
was, he was making the right decisions, yeah. He was giving the little give and go, coming on the loop and taking his score as well. Donny Kingston doing the same thing. Owen Lowry is quite impressive as well. He gets through an awful lot of work.
Does stupid things,
he
though.
Does, but he's a young player and he has great appetite for work in terms of showing, and creates space for his teammates around him, so I wouldn't be overly critical of him. Yes, of course, he has plenty of room for improvement, but did well. Kieran Lillis started the game very well for Leash and kind of faded out. John O'Loughlin was ever present, really. Yeah. He was in the game for the whole match.
I think the midfield broke even. It's just the midfield for the kickouts. Leash were in terrible trouble.
Yeah, when the kickouts went long, Leash were in bother, particularly off their own kickouts. But look, Begley was obviously quite solid centre back. Timmins, I thought, had a very good game. Mark Timmins at full back, and Garrett Dillon was very good in the corner.
Yeah,
and Graham Brody. I'm telling you, sweeper keeper, one we've been talking about this, he's great. I hope they all start doing it.
Graham Brody played wing forward for Portlaoise, you know, at championship level. So, like, Graham Brody, just he actually wants to go past the lad. He's not nervous in any way when he's out in around the mix and someone's
tackling. Well, my hope for the summer is that we see a goalkeeper breaking forward and getting up the field and kicking a point from play.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? Yeah, but it absolutely, when the team, when a team is pushing up and doing an aggressive push on your kickouts, if you can slip it to a cornerback and take the return, we all know that now you've got that extra man, and it's like a domino effect right up the field. So he's brilliant as this. Brendan Quigley's to come back into that team, lads, and that gives them that fetcher in midfield that when they won't be Leash wouldn't have been dominated in midfield if they had Quigley, because it's not just Quigley fetching it, it's Quigley dictating where it's breaking as well, or you know what I mean, maybe having a plan around that. So like, I mean, when you look at Gary Walsh, you look at Evan O'Carroll, and you look at Brendan and Quigley, so they're three guaranteed starters that really will strengthen that Leash team. So like, I mean, at the moment I see Leash maybe, you know, being a top half of Division 3. Like, I think the thing of Leash being favourite scout of Division 3, maybe that's kind of gone. It's hard to know, but like, I mean, I thought it was a decent game, and I think Carlow, the one thing about Carlow is, and the point, I didn't think they looked like a well-coached team personally, because a lot of talk around their coaching and everything like that. I think when you play that defensive system, good forwards have a better chance of breaking the defensive system than your weaker set of forwards. So you always say that you get men back to help your defence, but all you're doing is screwing your forward line over, because they'll find it hard. The team you're playing is going to leave a few men back, and your more limited forwards are going to find it harder to break that down than the more talented forwards on the other side. So really, I think we've come to a point that the best team will win on the day, that these defensive tactics don't ever help you to beat a team that's better than you anymore, because the managers now are going to be tactically astute and mirror it, so the better forwards will break down your defensive system more than your weaker forwards. So you're back at a stage where the best team will win 9 times out of 10, and you might get that surprise. So why not just go out and try and beat them?
Yeah, but it allows you to stay competitive in the game for as long as possible. You know, it does. Like, I mean, you have to judge the game, Johnny Giles, judge the game on its merits. Like, you know, you have to be able to play in different ways as the game dictates.
Yeah, but
like,
I don't see them. See, this is the thing. This is my problem with these defensive teams. It seems to be the only way they know. There's no such thing as, oh, we'll change it up in the middle of the game. They're married to it. They're married to this system. And it's like, this is what's going to get us. And it's almost like being competitive in a game is enough, without ever saying, let's be competitive for a game for the first 20 minutes, but then let's try to get scores on the board. It's the one dimensional nature, and the this is just the way we're playing. And we saw with Tyrone against Dublin, they had nothing. This is Tyrone at a top level. This system was all they had. So they had no way of getting back into the game outside of sitting inside their 45 and looking stupid when they were behind.
It's still hard, I think, to just for all of us completely write it off, and for them to listen to you whinging here, because you know, Carlow promoted, Fermanagh promoted, Galway on a whole new trajectory. Tyrone had a good year last year and blew up in their face. So it's hard just to completely say abandon all that now, like, you know, when it is generally still going well for them.
Yeah, can we get a mix? Like, can we have it that, can we just have a bit more fluidity in it and have a little bit more flexibility, that this doesn't have to be this, we're setting our stall out for the whole year and this is the way we're playing.
Yeah, but it depends what you have at your disposal. Like, you have to be realistic about it too. Like, I mean, if you don't have a good quality target man, well, then there's no point in kicking long ball in.
Yeah.
You know, the ball has to be played in front to a speedy forward on the move. So every team has to develop their own style of play. What I take issue with is teams that just develop a sort of a copycat philosophy on the game, rather than looking at their own players and saying, how can we get the best out of our own players? Like, you can look at any given match and you can say, right, we're playing against a team who's of equal ability. Well, we think they're of equal ability to us, so we're going to play the game this way because we think this will give us the best chance of winning the game and allows us, for our best players, to play their best. Sometimes you play against a team and you think, do you know what, if we open up too much here, their forwards will eat us alive if we leave space. So you have to try and tailor it a certain way. Now, that might mean that your best player in your team won't get the best out of him, but it's like Rochford was saying last year, sometimes you have to give up something in order to give your overall collective a better chance of winning. So again, I take issue with teams that just play a blanket system. You know, every team you have to develop some way of trying to score.
Yeah.
Now,
I think that's what these teams are doing. They're just, this is how we're playing. For example, Leash could have a small cornerback like Attride. like, Carlo won't ever take advantage of him because they'll have too many men back. Like, so say if Carlo have a big forward and they'd like to put a natural, right, Leash can just put, you know what I mean? There's no way of ever, if Leash have a slow enough fullback, say Timmins wouldn't be the fastest, Broderick took him for speed, they'll never get Timmins in a one-on-one situation because their game plan will never allow for them to take advantage of some of Leash's weaknesses. They're always playing this way. And, like, I mean, I don't know. I think it's flawed. But anyways, listen.
I do think Carlo would have lost the Leash anyway. Like, and maybe that's your point as well. But yeah. I think even if they tried to exploit their weaknesses, they're not at Leash's level.
No. I think Carlo would probably lose to Leash by 4 or 5 points in Croke Park any time they played him. And I think that's the reality of it. Like, I mean, there's not much they can do about it. They've tried the defensive line. In the attacking line, maybe Broderick wouldn't play as bad the next time and they get him enough ball, they could actually do better. Gannon's a good forward. I thought Carlo were better than I thought they were. I thought they were deplorable in the first 20 minutes. I thought they were absolutely outrageously bad. And then they kind of impressed me in the second half to the point where I'm thinking, like, these lads are decent. They don't have any bench.
They got some good scores in the second half where they kicked points from distance. Foley got a couple. Just taking the ball on the loop. You know, you have strong runners coming from deep, corner forward looping around, takes it off the shoulder and pops it over the bar, or gets a sort of an unchallenged shot off. I mean, that's the sort of stuff that is kind of good attacking play if you're playing a running game. But in order for that to work, you do need to have, say, two guys inside. Ideally, you want a left-footed fella one side and a right-footed fella the other side, so that either of them can come on the loop depending on the way the runners are coming from deep. So a guy can come in his left foot, clip it over the bar, come in his right. Like, Cork played this way for years back in the 2000s. Like, that's how they won All-Ireland. They had their corner forwards coming out on the loop because they were a running team. They never kicked the ball. So there are loads of different ways to play the game. But I do think that there's an overemphasis, or certainly has been over the last number of years, an overemphasis on negativity and defence first football, yeah, as opposed to, okay, we need to make sure that we're sensible at the back. We need to make sure that we have cover defenders. We need to know that we make good decisions. Okay, so that maybe means that your wing half backs when you're on the attack, or your two midfielders when you're on the attack, don't all bomb on. You know, that you have some sort of shape. You always have a spare defender at the back. But that could be your centre back because the centre half forward has drifted off. You know, it doesn't always have to be your bloody wing forward, your centre forward, your full forward line.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there's loads of different ways to coach and play the game. And I think we're starting to see a bit more variety in how teams are playing.
Yeah, no, exactly. We'll leave it there on that, lads. And, oh yeah, sure, we're back. We'll be back with a championship preview. We're going to go, there's a league final next week. I'm going on holidays tomorrow, so Conan's going to cover the hurling show, which anyone who just listens to the football show, tune across just to listen to Conan talking about hurling. I'm going to definitely go to listen from holidays and really cheer me up. I might stay in one night just to actually have the two of them, the preview and the review, and listen to both of them together.
It's going to be record numbers just for a car.
Right, we'll be back. We'll do one a week in April, so we won't see Keane again until championship preview. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.